Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
I'll tell you what, if I had learned one thing from last night to tonight, well, it's also something I've learned for the last couple of years as well, is that if you have any opinion other than Steph Curry is the greatest player in the world, nobody wants to hear it.
This is true. Nobody wants to hear it.
I'll tell you what, we talked about this last night. And, you know, look, Steph Curry is in the middle of a phenomenal run. He is fun to watch. This is 11 straight games of 30 or more points, and he's been terrific. But you got to have the entire conversation. And Steph Curry is not doing enough to lift his team in the Western Conference. All right, they're 6-5 in these games, and they're a 500 team. And if Steph Curry really is an all-time great, you want to talk about him like we talk about LeBron and some of the other players, you kind of have to be able to do that. Yeah, I get the Western Conference is tough, and I'm not saying Steph Curry's got to have them up at the top of the West, but should they be a little higher than in ninth place and a couple of games out of eighth? Yeah, of course they should be. Steph Curry is a tremendous shooter. He's the best shooter I've ever seen. But the same thing exists for Steph that exists for very few players in all of sports, and that is because of his image and the fact that everybody likes him and everybody has liked him, that he is almost impervious to criticism. Whereas any other player who is scoring 30 or more points a game, but their team isn't winning and they're out of the playoffs, what do they say about him? Yeah, they're Damian Lillard. Yeah. Or if it's LeBron James, it's, oh, LeBron's not doing enough. They're not winning. Scoring all these points, empty baskets, all these things happen. Steph Curry doesn't raise the level of the other guys around him. What he does is when Steph Curry is on and when he's surrounded by other all-stars, things open up for the other all-stars to be able to do things, right? When you have great players. But Steph Curry doesn't do enough when it comes to raising the level of the players that he plays with. Look, he gets his own shot, right? That's what he does. He takes half his shots from behind the three-point line. Okay, he doesn't get to the rim. He passes pretty well, but he doesn't do something where, hey, I can draw guys to me and pass off and suddenly here's somebody that has a wide open shot. He just doesn't do that. Right, so as good as he is, his image gives you a bigger impression of him. And, you know, him and Patrick Mahomes, two guys that any criticism of them is, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's the one thing I saw today, clearly all over today, social media today. Look, it was a big day for us virally. What we had last night, the Aaron Rodgers thing was big for us too, which was great. But the one thing I noticed today is that nobody has anything other than, wow, boy, Steph is great. Okay, he is a tremendous shooter, and he is a great show. But you got to have the other parts of it, too. And for a team that may not make the playoffs, boy, that's a bit of a thing you have to get in a conversation with. But nobody wants that. Nobody wants to hear part of that. Oh, see? Look how great Steph is. You can't say anything else. No, but what about this? No. You can't say anything else about it. What about the fact that he was a periphery all-star until Steve Kerr got there, and that's what turned him into a great player? No, Steph was always great. Okay. Why couldn't they go anywhere in the West when Steph was their best player when he was 21, 22, 23, 24 years old? No. Steph is great. Okay. Why did they need to go out and get Kevin Durant after clearly it should have been enough and Steph Curry still isn't an NBA Finals MVP? No. It's all the excuses are made for him more than any other player in the NBA. And I'm saying, and I'm starting with, he's great and he's terrific. He's the best shooter I've seen, but everybody just cuts off right there. You know what? Dennis Rodman is the greatest rebounder I've ever seen. Do we have any conversations about Rodman being, hey, look, he's one of those top all-time great type players? No. Steph Curry does one thing really, really well. And you know what? He's very sexy when he does it, right? He's able to step back and get his own shot, and it is awesome to watch. It's more fun than watching a guy pull down rebounds. Boy, Robin's got 18 rebounds. Boy, that was great. What he does one thing better than anybody I've seen. But does he do everything that the star players do? Does he affect the game more on offense? No. Does he affect the game defensively? No, he doesn't do those things. So when you talk about how what an all-time player he is. It's, you know what? He's a little overrated for that. If he didn't have the reputation that he has, there would be much more criticisms of him and the image of Steph Curry. Boy, he's a really, really good player. But, he still needs other things to be done around him to be able to really succeed. But nobody has any time for that take. Steph is great. Yes, he hits unbelievable shots, and I love it. It's awesome to see. It's really fantastic, and it's awesome. But the other parts are parts of it, too. But it's like, no, we just want to stop and wonder and go, wow, what a great shot. Okay, but the other stuff is part of it.
Well, whenever you start asking about defense with anything, people stop listening. Nobody wants to talk about defense, except when it comes to team defense to tell you why, you know, something that is beloved, say like the alignment of the Nets, can't work. They don't play defense. It's the regular season. They haven't had to. That doesn't mean that when it comes down to it, they can't commit to it, and maybe they don't. The answer is we don't know. Just like the MVP talk, right? We went through it in great detail last night. Find the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you find and download your audio as you go on your runs, walks, long car rides, or just trying to avoid listening to the kids yell at you or the dog bark at you, whatever the case may be. We appreciate you. Download it. Give it 5 stars. We'll love you forever. But the idea that there's a lot of basketball still to be played, right? We're talking about injuries and guys coming back from them, and then some of your other presumptive front runners in the MVP conversation. They're guys that have had very extensive injury histories, so we'll see if they're able to finish the job or if they suddenly have to bow out, you know, by default as well. But, you know, everybody likes a good MVP conversation. Seems like that's one thing the pandemic gave us. We talked about MVPs more in the last year than I remember in my life. And maybe it's just because I've finally gotten sucked into it a little bit. Because you know how much I abhor those conversations and Mount Rushmores and stuff. But hey, you know what? We you got to give the people what they want. Hot takes and rankings and lists get people fired up. And with Steph Curry, I mean, defense, just push that aside. Offensively, he's carrying a subpar team right now. Draymond Green is no longer Draymond Green. Kelly Oubre is one of the guys you're banking on for major production on a night-to-night basis. Andrew Wiggins, by this point, we kind of know what he is, right? And James Wiseman struggled at times, and then he got hurt. Probably not the guy they should have picked, but that's a whole other fight for another time. But, right, if you wanted to win right now, like he was a project guy, and you've seen that on the court this year. So if you were seriously thinking about competing, and obviously Clay getting hurt again is something you couldn't have predicted, but even still, you didn't add the other component part that necessarily pushed you over the finish line. Steph Curry's a guy that you either have to embrace or just be ready to get ratioed and have a lot of people mad at you, because the argument goes that he changed the game, right? That's all you ever hear. He changed the game. You know what? I think other people were smart enough to realize that shooting bleeping three-pointers all over the place was good for business, too.
Well,
I don't think he's, you know, somebody that, hey, he was doing it for a decade. Right? Look, he's the first to dunk the basketball, like you were watching the Will Ferrell movie. Right? watching the tropics go to work. What was that? No, that's illegal. No. I mean, that's not what a three-pointer was from Steph Curry. It existed in the game.
And Monix from outside gives the tropics lead. No, I'll give you – listen, Steve Kerr is the guy you want to say what revolutionized the game. Because the Warriors, what were they doing? Well, you know, they finished sixth in the West, was the highest they get to. They were meandering. If Steve Kerr doesn't show up, then you know what? Then Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's who they are, right? They're not these, hey, look at these players with multiple championships. They're Lillard and McCollum. That's kind of where they were. Boy, they're guys that can fill it up. You don't want to play them in an early round playoff series, but are they really going to go very far? That's what they would have been if Steve Kerr didn't show up. But Steve Kerr comes in with his offense, his motion. We're taking threes. We're doing all of this. And he did have a great set of players to put that in. Like he said, I have Steph. I know what I can do with him. I can do the same thing with Klay Thompson, and it worked. So I'm not saying that it wasn't that the players just plugged in and they were great. Clearly, Steph had that skill set to be able to become the greatest shooter on the planet. But would they really have gotten that? Would they really be at this point without Steve Kerr? I mean, really. I mean, we give Phil Jackson all kinds of credit for the triangle offense and how big the triangle offense was. Yeah, he had Michael Jordan, Shaq, and Kobe Bryant. Yes, of course the triangle offense is going to look great when you have these players. The triangle offense. The Lakers barely ran the triangle when they won the second set of championships.
Are you seriously going to try to disrespect Phil Jackson right now? No, is that what you're trying to do?
What I'm saying is, how dare you? I thought Phil Jackson would wake up by now. You know, but the thing is that we don't give Steve Kerr nearly the credit to say, hey, what about what you did here with shooting threes in his offense? Oh, yeah, no. It's not Steve Kerr. No. A lot of it is the system. And this is when I say Steph Curry is a system quarterback, right? It sounds bad. I get it. It sounds bad. But instead of going from a guy barely in the league to being able to contribute, he went from being a borderline all-star, because that's kind of what he was, to now look at this phenomenal player that he is. And he's at that way in this system with Golden State. When he does leave, because he will leave at some point, right? He's going to leave and go someplace else. Because eventually, look, we've talked about this. Eventually, he's going to understand no one's coming to Golden State anymore, right? We got lucky. We had the team we had, but Draymond Green is not going to be the same. Who knows what Klay Thompson's going to be when he gets back? And KD came, and that was awesome. But who's really going to come to do that anymore? No one's going to do it because, again, nobody knows what you're going to get there. So he's going to have to go. And then it's going to be interesting to see, oh, hey, Steph is sacrificing points for wins and all these things people are going to say because he's not going to be scoring 30, 35 a game when he goes to a different team because he's not going to be in that kind of offense. He's going to be the complimentary player that gets big shots. Look, and I'm sure it's going to be someplace like LA with the Lakers or the Clippers, someplace big. Maybe he goes back home to Charlotte, which is another big destination. I can see him doing that, all those places. And suddenly it's, boy, are we going to build that system around him, or is he going to be a guy that maybe scores 20, 24 a game now? Oh, it's still vintage Steph, but, you know, he's not the same guy. Yeah, because he's not in the same system. And he doesn't have the same players around him. That's how it's going to go for Steph Curry. And people will still make excuses for him. Oh, no. But he's with new team now, new thing, new responsibilities. No, if he was still that kind of player, he would get his own shots. He'd be able to do that in the flow of this offense that he's in. Why is he suddenly? Because if he's a great player, you're great in any system, right? Now, let's see what happens when he winds up going someplace else. I mean, this is just how it is for Steph Curry. Again, and I preface this by saying he is a terrific, fantastic player. But we overrate him at times. And even now is a time when even the big show he's putting on, okay, really? I mean, you see a lot of these games now, everybody's scoring 130 points a night. So, it's great. Offense is a great show, and it's fantastic. But really, how much of it is, boy, hey, Steph Curry is just great, but there's other mitigating circumstances. No, I just don't want to hear about him.
Yeah, I know. For the next month, I'd really like to see him locked down on defense. So you were on with Doug Gottlieb earlier. Did you go Doug enough to hate today that he hated you or what?
No. When I was on with Doug today, and he said, you know, because, you know, Doug and I work together a lot. We do Dan together. And look, we're arguing about sports. You know, it's the way it goes.
I'm back here. But yeah.
And he said, I love you, man. He goes, yeah, I love everything else about you. He goes, but man, this is a bad take. I go, let's talk about it. Let's talk about why it's a bad take. And, you know, we went back and forth, and I understood his points about Steph Curry and what he's doing. And my points were that they should be better in the standings if he truly was still an all-time great. And, you can't discount what anybody else is doing and say that, boy, Steph is doing this and nobody else is doing it. No, other guys are having great years. Other guys are scoring a ton. You know, Bradley Beal is having a phenomenal year. He's got the Wizards, five games out.
You busted out Bradley
Beal, too. You know, I mean, really, Steph Curry has the Warriors in ninth place and they're two games out of eighth. Bradley Beal has the Wizards in 10th place and they're four games out of eighth. And Bradley Beal is leading the league in scoring, right? Him and Steph Curry are right there with each other. But no one's talking about Bradley Beal for MVP. So, I mean, you know, the main thing we got into was the MVP discussion, and it was, how can you give a guy the MVP when they might not even make the top eight? I mean, really, this is making 7 through 10 in the playoffs is the new playoff, right? If you're 9 and 10, this is a made-up playoff thing. Obviously, if the Knicks finish 9th, it's a great thing. But, I mean, you're talking about the 9th-10th spot is something made up to get teams in. And I can't give a guy the MVP if his team finishes. finishes in ninth place in a conference because they're just okay. And you could say, oh, Steph has raised the level of the team. Well, if he raised the level, if he's that great a player, they'd be more than 500. LeBron James raised levels of the Cavaliers all by himself, you know, for a long time. Other players tend to do that when you are the great player. Nikola Jokic is getting MVP talk. Why? He has raised the level, and the Nuggets are 17 games over 500. Joel Embiid has raised the level of the Sixers. They are now in first place, and the only change was Joel Embiid decided, I need to be a superstar now. I'm ready for that level part of my career. You raise the level of your team. It happens. And like I said, I'm not saying Steph, he's not working with a ton here, but they should be better than ninth. All right? If you're all that, and if he affects the game that much and makes his team that much better, they win more games than they have. And
instead,
so that was my point.
Celebrating the depth of the West, you went back to that argument and you're staying with the bad take. It's okay. Guys do that.
Twitter it out about a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. You could disagree, and that's fine, my friend. You disagree. I get it. Rodon didn't pitch a no-hitter tonight. You're a little salty. I get it.
They got the victory.
I understand.
Through three starts, he's got a 0.47 ERA. I think he's doing just fine.
No. He's on the way down now. He hit his peak last week. Now he's on the way down. That's how it's going.
Well, it's awful hard to match that now, wasn't it?
Why not? He did it once.
Other than hitting a dude in the back of the foot.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Clearly today, look, there was one story, and it was something that overwhelmed all of us. We waited for the verdict to come in. It came in middle of the afternoon. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, second-degree manslaughter by a jury on Tuesday for his role in the murder of George Floyd. Floyd's death and the video, we couldn't believe it when we saw it, and everybody was on edge wondering how this jury trial was going to finish. And it finished today, and this was the verdict that was reached earlier today. Now, there's likely going to be appeals and different and sentences, mm-hmm. but this is how it went today. Many athletes have weighed in on this and weighed in with thoughts of the trial and how they felt and how it went, and justice was served here. And, you know, the thing is, as I look at this and I go, yes, you know, justice was served. But it's also not a great day because, you know, look, that's not bringing George Floyd back. It's not solving the problem that we have in this country. You know, it was a day for justice, but it's not a day to really celebrate. So it's very strange. You know, seeing how it unfolded, that's kind of what I come back to. And I really think that Stan Van Gundy, Pelicans head coach, really said it the best today when he talked about where he is at and where players are at when it comes to what happened today. Here's Stan Van Gundy before the game tonight. This from right after the verdict was announced.
In my mind, justice was done, but it's hard to celebrate. It's hard to celebrate because it doesn't bring back George Floyd. And so we had somebody needlessly killed right in front of us, you know, right in front of all of us, because we could see it on video. And I applaud the just verdict, but it's hard for me to celebrate based on where the whole thing started. George Floyd still being dead, people since then being dead, and not having overwhelming confidence that this is going to be a step in the right direction and not an isolated incident.
You know, he went on to say, Mike, that he's glad that the players are getting involved and that generation's getting involved because they're the ones that are going to, you know, affect change. And I didn't think about it a lot until I heard Stan Van Gundy say that. And I said, yeah, you know, that's something that, you know, that's the hope that we get, because right now we're still divided. America is still divided, and there's nothing that we have done that's shown that we're going to get back that way. My generation, our generation, look, I'm 50 now, you know, you're in your 40s. You know, we failed bringing America together. Right. Everything, you know, the generation before us in here, we failed because we're not together. But when I think of the kids now who are in their early 20s and who are in high school and coming out and are the ones that are seeing the world the way it is, the ones that see less color and see less controversy and understand that we're all in this together. And that's one thing that I can't get over. We can't realize in this country is that we're all in this together, right? We all are. I mean, no matter from the moment you were born and however long you spend on this earth, we're in it with everybody else. We're all trying to make it work. And I think, and I look and I think about hope, and I think, well, that's the generation that has to do it, right? That's the generation, the ones coming up now, seeing what's going on, they're the ones that have to affect change. And look, we always want to look to our kids and say, hey, you know, do this. We want to leave the world a better place for you. And now, unfortunately, we're saying you got to make the world a better place, and you have to do that. And that's one thing I'll say for everybody who's that young, go do it. We need you. You know, you're the ones that are going to have the energy to affect change, because, you know, we tried. And maybe we didn't do it the best we could. Maybe there's ways we failed, but we just didn't do it. And so now for you to go out and do it, that younger generation, go do it. I mean, don't come after Mike and my jobs, right? Because, you know, I mean, sports talks and hot takes, you'll leave that to us. But changing the country for the better, you know, go do that, because that's what we need.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to a reality of change is long and hard, and you need touch points to make it, you know, exacerbate the situation. And sometimes there are unfortunate, you know, uncomfortable moments. And this is a terrible loss for the Floyd family and, you know, a community that mourns, and a lot of people that say why and how, and you're trying to get to the bottom of it, and you're trying to impact change. What we don't need is more fiery rhetoric, because you get that all over the place, right? You've got, you know, the powers that be, you'll get some platitudes and you'll get some highbrow speaking points. But what does it really impact? Right. And then you have others that, you know, will shout slogans that really just get subjected to different interpretations and just muddy the picture even more. Right. And so, look, I don't know about you. I was getting alerts all day, you know, from different venues that I'm on mailing lists and, you know, sports teams and news sites and whatever of, you know, the local police, this, the local police here, all across this country, just ready in the event that, you know, we had some re-ignition of things from last summer. And as of now, I'm not seeing anything to that level or of that respect tonight. And, you know, folks trying to figure out, okay, what's next steps, right? You've got your precedents. As you said, there'll be appeals. There'll be more discussions and what flows out of this as you try to change different parts of society that are long embedded, right? Changing attitudes overnight doesn't happen. And even for kids, they're born into circumstance. They're born into families and areas where maybe it's going to take beyond them and more generations before you truly eradicate some of the feelings and ill wills that are there. And remember, you know, it's always going to be there, right? You're not going to be able to eradicate things entirely. But what you hope is that there's more dialogue and substantive change where there can be strides made and resources deployed appropriately to help communities, to help policing agents, and to try to bridge some of that divide. So today was a day that had a lot of people on edge. And if for a moment they exhaled, and they can say, all right, here's a system that there's one. And then the hope is, as Stan Van Gundy said, that you find number two and you start getting a bit of momentum in that regard.
So the Raiders decided to get involved today following the Derek Chauvin verdict. They put up a tweet on social media that is white over black that says, I can breathe, with the date 4/20/21. Now, obviously, that hits many people a very weird way because, wait, George Floyd, the whole thing was, I can't breathe. That's really tone deaf. And the Raiders came out and said, this is from Mark Davis, the team owner, that said, listen, I took the words from George Floyd's brother, who said today, now I can finally breathe, you know, after what happened. So that's why we put it up. But we're not taking it down. And they actually pinned it to their Twitter account. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand what happened here. Look, the Raiders look at this and they put this out there. And look, you don't always know how something's going to play on social media. You don't always know. You don't always know how a text is going to play when you send it to somebody. It's like, are you being funny? Are you pissed at me? Well, I don't understand. So they put this out, and clearly they had the reason to do it. Mark Davis took it from George Floyd. You see the other quotes and tweets the Raiders have put out today on this issue. And so I get what they were trying to do. Hey, I'm going to use the words by George Floyd's brother, and I'm going to put this out there. But then you see that it's really tone deaf, and you see the stir that it is causing, and it is taking away from your message. This is when Mark Davis came out and said, I got it right from George Floyd's brother. If I insulted the family, I'm sorry, but we're not taking it down. So hang on a second. So if you did insult the family, you're not going to take it down? Now, because they wouldn't take it down or adjust, I'm wondering just what they're trying to get up there with this tweet, right? Because I didn't think about it before. I said, okay, there is it tone deaf? Yes, but this is where normally you get from somebody from the team, usually a vice president or someone in public affairs or in the PR department. You don't get the team owner saying things, but you get, hey, we wanted to put out a message of support for George Floyd's family. We were taking from his brother's words. We understand that this is not, you know, this wasn't taken a different way. We apologize. We stand with George Floyd, and you put something else up. But when you double down on it and you actually say, if the family's offended, I'm sorry, but we're leaving it up. Well, so now what are you putting that up for? Why? Well, now I'm wondering why the Raiders go to the wall to put this up there. Why is Mark Davis answering this question? This is not something that usually hits Mark Davis's desk, right? It's, hey, figure it out. You know, you're going to say something. You know, maybe Mike Mayock puts out a statement, but usually it's somebody you don't even know. And we're reading off a card saying it's Raiders director of personnel. It's Raiders operations director. We're getting something like that. But Mark Davis decides to weigh in. So now I'm wondering just what was this with the Raiders? And I'm wondering why did they go to the wall to double down and keep this up and pin the tweet up there? So now they've put more emphasis on this, and it's more of a bad optic for them when they could have easily just said, hey, this is what we were doing. People would have said, oh, I get it. Yeah, it didn't come out great, and it's not a story anymore. But now, now we're going to leave it up. We're going to make people see it, continuing to come to it. It's continuing to get noticed, social media, everywhere else. I don't know why the Raiders do this. I don't know why they stood, we're going to stand on this hill forever, when it clearly was a hill that, hey, you are on, but maybe you need to get off that hill and figure out a different hill. They didn't do it.
Well, I come back to, look, you can have a bad take, a bad tweet. It's not necessarily misguided. I mean, look, you talked about how much derision you've gotten for your Steph Curry tweet. In the ratioed world, you haven't taken it down. You've doubled down. You've gone on other shows. You've called out KNBR on 145 occasions. Likewise, the Raiders here, the Las Vegas Raiders. I kind of mashed that all together. Look, I know this was co-opted, and there were people wearing shirts, I Can Breathe, and making fun of it. I don't believe that's any way tied to what the Raiders are doing here. I think this was the expression that in my timeline, I certainly saw a number of folks that said, okay, I can exhale now, or something of that nature after the verdict was read, where it was some derivative before the verdict of just holding my breath. I can't breathe. I'm, you know, nauseous, whatever the feelings, the emotions, all of that were coming into today as it took 10 hours to bring back a verdict, denied bail, so straight to prison, all of those things. And perhaps this is the expression, and Mark Davis owned it, that it was him to say, all right, I can breathe. So today, expressing something, the Floyd family and George Floyd's brother, but certainly maybe speaking for their own thoughts and the fights and the discussions and the efforts they've got in terms of their own community involvement, that this is a step forward. And I can't chide them for that. You're at 32,000 likes, 65,800 quote tweets, and almost 27,000 messages, which I'm not even going to begin to read. I know we spotlighted one from former executive with the Raiders, Amy Trask, earlier, saying if you hear thunder, then it's Al, and Al's not going to be happy about it. I maybe Mark Davis addresses it further. Going, you know, tomorrow there's another discussion about it. But once it's up, what does taking it down mean? You're still going to, now you're going to come out with a statement going, well, we're sorry we offended people on Twitter.
Yeah, no, right? Now you're stuck. Now you're stuck because you had the chance to say, okay, I get that maybe this didn't play the right way, so we put an alternate message up or something. It happens. That's how it goes.
Right.
But now that you've left it up, now when you take it, now taking it down or doing anything, that doesn't do anything. You had your chance, and now you're gonna wear this. And now it's,
yeah,
okay,
I think you're going to wear it either
like
way. I don't think, even if they hadn't put out a statement and doubled down on it, if they just left it up. I mean, once it's there and it's screenshot, I mean, it was on TMZ maybe 10 minutes after it went up, right, and started to gain traction there over the course of the night. I mean, even if you pull it away, now you got to explain it, and now you're in a whole other PR firestorm of trying to explain what you meant, which is always a difficult proposition too.
Because
a lot of folks aren't going to accept what you had to say.
No, you're right.
You got backlash, so screw you. I mean, so you're in a no-win situation.
Yeah, but then you know what? Then you apologize, and then it's forgotten about. And then it's, okay, you did this, and now everybody. But now it stays up like this. It stays in your mind doubly. And everybody else, why is this happening this way? Why have they decided to continue to double down on this? And without saying anything, it makes it worse. I don't know why teams decide, okay, we're going to do this, and if you keep doing this, it's going to be worse for you. Yep, that's what I want to do. I want to keep doing something that's going to bring negative attention to my team and make us potentially look bad. I don't know why you would keep doing that when it was, okay, we can limit the damage here. This is what we were going for. And now I get that not everybody took it that way. So, okay. Because when you put out a message of support, it should be something that nobody is able to say, oh, I can't believe it. Message of support should be something that everybody gets on
Jason,
board with.
No,
it
should be, no, it shouldn't be. You know, no, be you know better. You know better than that.
When
you know better than that in this day and age.
When you're
if you're not
100%
to where somebody's agreeing with you 100%, you're against everybody.
Yeah,
don't you know that?
But there's a message of support that sometimes that's easy to put out. And this was an easy one to put out. It was instead, you know, the Raiders biffed it, and now they're sticking with it. Like I said, there was damage, but they could have got out of it. I think they could have got out of it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, they said there was life on Mars today, I saw in a tweet. So, I mean, Bowie was ahead of his time there.
Yeah, but did you see the tweet? It says proof of life on Mars, and they pan over, and it's a dog digging a hole.
Well, how do you know it's not a space dog?
Well, wow, now that would be something. Must
you know,
some kind
Dogecoin to the moon. Yeah!
Yay.
Yeah, I was there, but I left a dog on Mars. And look, it's still doing okay.
Up
no,
so
they left
good.
Matt Damon there a long time ago. He made it out. Sorry,
exactly.
Spoiler. Let's leave a dog there. I mean, I get it, but I'm like, ooh, life on Mars. And I'm seeing like real people retweet this and like NASA, rogue NASA, and stuff. I'm like, ooh, what is it? And it's dog digging a hole.
Yeah, it was funny. It made everybody laugh. Well, we all need some levity.
You know what it's like to just laugh and laugh and laugh? Yes. Yes, I do. So big news in the NBA tonight, as we got big injury news for two teams that we like to think are on a collision course for the finals, the Lakers and the Nets. We'll deal with the Lakers first, as we find out LeBron James is now likely weeks away from his return. Now, there's about a month-ish left in the regular season, so if LeBron is weeks away, it means not next week and maybe not the week after that. So that's at least 2 weeks before he comes back, maybe three, maybe not till the end of the season. So LeBron James is still a ways away. Meanwhile, for the Nets, they do not have Kevin Durant, who missed tonight's game. Look, the Nets had a big win. No matter who's missing for the Nets in the regular season, they always find a way to get it done. Doesn't matter. Regular season, no. Regular season, the Nets are terrific. So they always find a way. And they score 130 points, like they score 130 points in every bleeping game. They beat the Pelicans tonight 134-129. But no Kevin Durant, which we knew because he's still out with a left thigh contusion. Hopefully he is back soon. But the big news was James Harden. As the Nets say, they are back to square one on his right hamstring strain. He has been trying to come back, and the Nets say now they're back to beginning. They have no idea when he can come back and play. So if I have to look at both of these teams and say, all right, you have the defending champs who are trying to get back, and you have a team that everybody thinks is coming out of the East with three superstars, I'm worried more about the Nets right now than I am the Lakers. I'm not worried as much about the Lakers because there's just a couple of reasons. I'll tell you why. Lakers have been okay without their stars, right? They've not been great. They've not made hay in the Western Conference, but they've been one game under 500 without Anthony Davis and without LeBron James. AD's on his way back Thursday night. Likely he makes his re-debut. As Kyle Kuzma said, that dude better be blank and playing.
His ass better be there.
And they've been okay, right? And clearly you don't need to worry about finishing in a certain place in the Western Conference because teams 1-6 are all pretty good. You'd love to finish 1-2, so you're playing against a team that's trying to survive the 7-10-8-9 series. But in the end, really, all right, we're going to finish 6th. Well, we really don't want to play the Nuggets. Well, I really don't want to play the Jazz. Well, we don't want to play the Suns. Well, we don't want to play. There's a lot of good teams in the West. So as long as you finish in the top 6, it's okay. So the Lakers, the stakes are a little low. And plus, I really do believe that if it was a bigger deal for the Lakers now and they were free-falling through the standings, AD and LeBron would have already been back. LeBron's a really healthy dude, right? He's been healthy for the majority of his career. When he sits out a lot, I can look at this and I go, okay, at some point we go from he's sitting out to load maintenance. And if the Lakers were in trouble and they were having difficulty making the playoffs, it looked like they'd wind up in the play-in game, they both would have been back already. But the Lakers have been all right because they didn't falter and fall through the Western Conference. They stayed upright enough, so they're in a good spot for AD to come back, and they have some winnable games coming up. They also have some losable games coming up, but it's not a really difficult schedule. It's kind of an average schedule down the stretch. So if that happened, I really think the Lakers would have been back, and LeBron and they would have been back now. Now, the reason I worry about the Nets is because they've only played 7 games together. And while they're regular season good, it doesn't matter who's playing. It doesn't matter if they have Harden and KD. It doesn't matter if they have Kyrie and Harden. It doesn't matter. They're still winning. But you get to the playoffs, and suddenly it's, okay, buckets are a little bit tougher to come by. Teams are playing a little bit better defense. We don't know how healthy you guys are going to be. And so can you count on KD for being able to play every other night? Is James Harden going to be able to come back for the second round of the playoffs? And so I worry much more about the Nets and their health because they haven't really played together. Ask the Clippers what it's like when you could put a bunch of new guys together and you say, we're going to be fine once we get to the playoffs. You're kidding. We're going to be great. All our guys, they never played together last year. They struggled. They went home early. So that's why I'm worried more about the Nets right now than I am the Lakers with both teams with these injuries.
See, I still have some positivity because the way you described it, we're banking on all sorts of guys coming back healthy. And for the rest of the league, we're banking on other guys that have had injury problems in the past, Embiid, staying healthy through the rest of this regular season and into the playoffs. A lot of ifs and ands and buts. It's kind of like the MVP conversation. Just wait a minute. Like weather in the Midwest, a lot will change. So I think there's still a lot to be had here. The load maintenance argument, I'd love that comes up. I think I broached it about 2 weeks ago with you here, just saying it was coming. It was coming soon.
That's what you're a broacher.
Well, I do. You just raise your hand and say, all right, when do we flip the switch between it was a sprain and he's kind of just been riding it out, knowing he doesn't need a ton of regular season games to get ready and getting the rotation set. See, it gets into great conspiracy theory, right? I'm not so convinced with Anthony Davis. That's the one that I'm kind of wringing my hands on. You know, with LeBron, if it was truly a high ankle sprain, I mean, that could linger. That could be a problem. And yes, he's been a cyborg to date, but father time comes for us all. don't we know? So you have that. With Anthony Davis, it's an injury that we think we've seen before, and it usually doesn't end well if you try to get back too soon. But we'll see. He's allegedly going to be ready for Thursday, as you alluded to Kuzma's colorful quote the other night. With the Nets, how do we know they're not just playing possum to a degree too? Hey, just put it back out there. He needs more time. Would you like to have more than seven games played? Sure. Does it look like they need it, though? I mean, they've risen up and played. They've played some defense when they needed to. Tonight, they didn't need to. They just outlast and outscore, and Zion was magnificent, debuting his new shoes. One day after I told you, you're going to see an awful lot of Zion and his shoes from Nike, and sure enough, the next day, hey, look, here he is doing a barrage of interviews and holding up his shoes. Just crazy how that all comes together now, isn't it? But I think when we look at the navigating the Eastern Conference is where the win is for these guys, whether they have one, two, or three of those players together. It would be nice if Spencer Dinwiddie were along for the ride. But, you know, as we look at this squad, I think there's an opportunity on the Eastern Conference side of things to still make some hay.
But here's why I go for the Nets, and I'm a little bit more nervous for them. Another reason why is that, like I said, it doesn't matter where you finish in the West, right? Because look, clearly the West is, there's all good teams. In the East, there's only three really good teams. I mean, if you want to start counting the Knicks, as hey, you got to watch out for them. I mean,
well,
look,
hey,
tomorrow
they don't quit. You know, with Thibodeau, as long as guys can answer the bell, you're going to get 48 minutes of hell.
Oh, dude, tomorrow night, Hawks and the Knicks, it's like the battle for fourth place. It's battle for home court advantage. It's going to be a huge night, man.
I hate that I'm feeding into your Knicks love, but I've gotten to watch them enough, and I love watching them play. And they've got that Thibodeau feel to them, the dog in them, as folks will say. For 48 minutes, there are a bunch of Joakim Noahs out there. They're playing playing their hearts out.
If you're the Nets, right, you got to think about, we have to finish first in the East, right? Because that's where you want to avoid having to play a really good team in the second round, because you don't know what your injury situation is going to be. You don't know if James Harden's going to be back. You know if Kevin Durant's going to be back. So you want to give yourself as much time as possible, and you want to give your team a chance to gel, since clearly it looks like, I think we're going to go the rest of the regular season without seeing the big three play another game together. I mean, and it's probably going to be Harden, because there's no way they're going to rush him back. KD will get back at some point, but they're not going to go with and rush Harden back. So I wonder if we're not going to see Harden until the playoffs. Now, your first round, you should be fine, right? Because you've seen, look, like I said, the Nets are regular season good, man. They are regular season good. But then that second round of the playoffs, you kind of want to play the Hawks or the Knicks. You don't want to play the Bucks or the 76ers, right? Because you're finished set. You don't want that. You want to be able to push that until the East Finals. You want the Bucks and Sixers to take care of one another, and one of those teams is going home, and you're playing the other one. Okay, that's why I said for a long time, hey, the Nets' next big game is probably going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. Now with James Harden not coming back for a while, suddenly you could get into that second round, and are you going to really beat the Bucks or the Sixers without one or two of those guys? It's not going to happen. Look, the Bucks are playing much, much better. The Sixers have played at one high level all season long, whether they've had Joel Embiid or not, which is scary news. So you're telling me you're going to get through that second round of the playoffs without all three of those guys? You're not. And so if you don't finish first, that's the prospect you're looking at. So if I'm the Nets, I got to go to the wall to try to finish first place in the Eastern Conference. The West, I don't give a crap about. East, yeah, you got to go finish first.
No, I don't think you need to. I think you're going to be able to play through the Eastern Conference. I think the Western Conference is just such a much tougher slog. Again, health issues are there, right? We talked about Donovan Mitchell. I have to circle back those. A little bit of tweets. Spencer Dinwiddie tweeting out that, you know, the potential is there for and Steve Nash talked about him being ahead of rehab. Now, wouldn't that be a nice thing to bolster your squad as you have to, you know, pick names out of a hat as to which of those three superstars are going to play on a given night? But part of it is also pacing, right? Coming off of the the bubble year. You know, you're also trying to make sure you're managing injuries and soreness and whatever correctly. And I think they'll be ready come prime time. For the Lakers, it's just great theater, right? How injured are they? And is this current supporting cast ready for prime time when it's all said and done? Can you get it done with Dennis Schroeder? And look, what about the Clippers? They've been playing off in no man's land. Nobody's talking about them.
Right. Well, listen, we talked
about basketball. They get the win tonight.
Yeah, I told you
Portland.
A week ago.
That was a great game.
If I got to pick one team that's going to get out of the West right now, it's the Clippers.
Well, but you were trying to curry favor because Adam Oslin does tweet at you. I mean, he comes at you hard for some of your takes. I believe the system quarterback take, I think he sent it to you like, what, 12 times in the last
Yeah, I think so. I get a lot of those. Yeah, it happened. But here's the thing. When they both come back, when LeBron and AD come back, trust me, it's going to be, we forgot how good these guys were. We forgot how good this team was when both of them were together. It's like people want to dismiss the Lakers now that, they're trouble. LeBron's not healthy. They don't have AD. Like I said, if you're 500 without your two superstars that the team is built around, okay, that's pretty good. And then when they get back and start boat racing teams because they're going to be fresh because LeBron's had time off, the same thing with AD, it's going to be, now I remember how good the Lakers are. The Lakers are fine. As long as they do come back, and LeBron's going to need no time because he's the one guy that's okay. Well, he's had most of the season. He's played with these guys. If he comes back for game one of the playoffs, the Lakers are going to be fine. AD's coming back in a couple of days. I have no worries about the Lakers whatsoever as long as we get the return to health of both of these guys. Doesn't matter if LeBron comes back tomorrow or if he comes back in the last game of the regular season.
Come on, you just threw a bucket of water on your hot take. Hey, if these guys are healthy, come on.
I have no worries about them. The whole point is who am I worried more about, the Lakers or the Nets? I'm worried more about the Lakers because the Lakers are going to be healthy.
So you're more worried about the Nets, not the Lakers.
Yes.
Because you're convinced that there's some kind of magic going on there.
With the Nets?
No, with your Lakers, suddenly some voodoo these guys are going to be 100% healthy.
Yes.
What the hell?
Trust me, dude, you really think LeBron wouldn't be back now if the Lakers were in trouble? Of course he'd be back. AD would be back too, but they've been able to
I just like that you've now minimized the extent of both their injuries.
They'd be back.
Into load management. I knew it would happen, and you knew what? It had to be you. It had to be you, and it'll be on tomorrow morning as well. Anyway. Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon here on Fox Sports Radio.
Yeah, I do want to say, last night when we talked about Steph Curry and the all-time great list and where he was and players that ranked ahead of him, it was nice to see that on TV today. I thought that was nice. We did it last night, and then it became a big thing for us virally, and it got on TV today, and other people got to reap the rewards of it. That was pretty fun seeing that. So we're doing something right.
Yeah.